The fuzzy-looking gelatine silver photographs that NASA used in the 1960s and 70s to publicise its efforts to land men on the moon are in stark contrast to the high-definition images we see these days of planets. But the impact of those first black-and-white images on the world was astonishing. An exhibition of them is going to show as part of Wellington's Photoval Photography Festival. I see what you did there. Art historian Jeffrey Batchin has curated live from the moon, selecting from images that were transmitted to Earth from the moon. And I spoke to him and to senior science communicator at Wellington's Carter Observatory, Haritina Mugashan, first asking Jeff what story Live from the Moon is telling.
It's really the story of those photographs of the moon taken by spacecraft sent up to do so, as opposed to, say, photographs taken through telescopes and therefore shot through the clouds and atmospheres of the Earth. From about 1959 on, when the Soviets began to send craft up and to send photographs back, my story is the Americans' story. So when the Soviets sent photographs back, say, of the far side of the moon in 1959, the American government suddenly realized in the midst of the Cold War that Soviets were getting something of an advantage here. So they then began to plan a kind of crash effort to be able to send American spacecraft up and take American photographs. But they didn't get the far side of the moon until 1965, so it actually took them some time to catch up with the Soviet efforts.
So what medium are we talking about? When the Soviets took photographs, I mean, I do remember the famous photograph, the first time that anyone had ever seen the reverse of the moon. Was that on film? Was that on a primitive video? What was it taken on?
In that particular case, the Soviets organized a system where the negative was actually developed in the spacecraft, and then when it had been developed, it was scanned, and a radio signal was sent back to Earth. And that radio signal was then reconstituted by computers into the form of a photograph. And the Americans adopted that system only once. They adopted a number of different systems, and they only did that type once.
I can remember, I mean, I'm old enough to remember what that was like, but the whole world just suddenly stopped in their tracks and say, I need to see more shots of the moon. You know, it was just fascinating, partly because of the technology as much as anything. How are they doing that? That's astonishing.
Yeah, it is astonishing. In a sense, this is an early history of digital imaging, because what we're really talking about are electronic signals sent back in bursts of radio signal to Earth, which are then, you know, algorithmically turned into photographs by computers on Earth. Mm. And then those photographs, the ones in this exhibition, have actually been sent to organs of the press by the electric telegraph. So they're digitized once again, and then they're reconstituted as photographs, you know, in Chicago or London or wherever they might have been published, and then published in newsprint, in newspapers. And I think one of the remarkable things that we might remember, Simon, but most people probably forget, is that these very strange photographs of this, you know, planetary or this lunar body are appearing in daily newspapers, or for that matter, in some cases, are being broadcast live on your television screen. Well, you're watching the news, and then you're watching the Flintstones, and then live from the moon, they're actually showing you live footage as the space capsule comes closer and closer to crashing onto the surface. And it's like this weird conceptual art experience, but in your domestic living space.
Haritina, I need to get you in here, but I mean, you're clearly younger than I am, but I mean, you know, what do you think when you see these primitive photographs the first time that anyone had really got that close to the moon?
I'm completely fascinated by them, by all those first photographs that have ever been taken of space. Actually, one of my favorite photographs in the whole world is the very first picture ever taken of space on board of a rocket. With a classical camera. The description of that was, this is Earth as an alien spacecraft might see it. So that's what they were thinking at the time. There are aliens out there. When they come to Earth, this is what they will see when they land.
But looking at the shots of the moon, another of the things that's kind of fascinating about it is there was no atmosphere. It was the clearest possible shots you could have. There was nothing blurry about them.
Absolutely. And very many times we get people calling the observatory and trying to engage in conversations about whether these pictures were real or not. It's just one of the discussion points that, yes, these pictures are real. This is how the moon looks like. And I think it is extraordinary that we have these pictures from somewhere else in our solar system other than Earth.
One thing one has to remember looking back is how little we knew about the moon in, say, 1964. So at that point, NASA is imagining that they, in the long term, will be able to land human beings on the moon's surface, but nobody actually knows what that surface is like. So they're worrying, is there, like, 12 feet of silt, and that anybody stepping on the surface might just sink. Part of the function of these photographs is to provide scientific information as to what the surface of the moon is like. Is it firm? Is it volcanic? Is a landing a spacecraft on that surface even feasible? So at this point, these photographs are being scrutinized by us in newspapers, but by scientists at NASA, trying to work out even the most basic information about what the moon is like. It's amazing to think that we've been around as a culture for thousands of years, and at 1964, we still didn't really know very much about what the moon's actual substance was like.
So part of the reason for having these photographs was as a sort of a recce, because the point of the exercise was to get man on the moon, and so you were getting as many pictures as possible to do that. But it was also propaganda in some respects too, wasn't it? They wanted to keep the interest up, though from my memory, I don't think they needed to try very hard to do that leading up to that time at any rate.
The photographs served a number of different functions. So one of them was as science, what information can be gleaned about this body from the photographs. Another bit is about competing with the Soviets in the midst of Cold War for this new territory. Even if the Americans weren't planning to literally take it over, they would want to show the world that they are as technologically advanced as their Soviet rivals. And then the third thing is they have to justify to the American taxpayer the millions of dollars that are being spent to get these photographs. So the photos are also publicity devices to support NASA, both in the eyes of the American public, but even in the eyes of the Congress that is funding all of this.
The problem is it's such a punchline when you actually put your first foot on the moon and you say, well, here we all are. And then the problem was that they wanted to keep going to the moon, but how do you add a sequel, if you like, to this great story? I mean, one of the things that they did, I think, was they took not photos of the moon, but photos on the moon, didn't they?
They did.
And they had photos from the moon too, which is a fascinating one too, where they there's a famous photo of the Milky Way. That's part of the exhibition too.
Well, actually, the moon is the best place to take photographs of space, and especially of the Milky Way and stars. If you go on the dark side, it's like really dark.
On the other hand, if you come and look at the exhibition, you'll see that it's not as easy to take photos as you might imagine. The conditions are good, but what you'll see, what you'll witness, are all of these different kinds of technologies, thermographs, infrared photographs, and all sorts of other devices whereby you can get different kinds of information than what just normal light might allow you to capture in a photograph.
So in the exhibition, Jeffrey, I mean, what are the range of media that are being used to get these photos?
What the exhibition consists of are all press prints sent out by NASA to publicize this effort to land people on the moon. So it begins in 1964 and ends in 1973, where humans have actually landed on the moon. Indeed, the last photograph in the exhibition shows two astronauts photographing each other, each holding a camera and photographing each other. There are at least three different ways in which those photographs were made. The first spacecraft were literally just put on rockets and sent up, and they crash-landed onto the moon. So the moon is littered with American wreckage, basically, and they would broadcast TV signals back until they hit. So some of the photographs in the exhibition show, so these images would come in these strips, like radio signal strips, 512 lines to an image. But at a certain point, the spacecraft would hit the surface of the moon, and all you got was static. So the photograph would literally show you static. Second lot, they actually took the photographs from the capsule and developed them in the capsule and then scanned, just like the Soviets had, scan the negative and then send that information back, which got you better quality photographs, but only 200 of them. Whereas the next type of craft, Surveyor, they actually soft landed on the moon. They had a camera on a periscope and they could make, I think they made as many as 20,000 photographic images because the craft wasn't destroyed, so they could keep signaling it from Earth to turn the camera and take another show. But in each of those cases, there are problems with the photographs that the exhibition demonstrates. Ripples in the surface, distortions. Often they come with grids up because they're trying to create maps out of all of these photographs, so they come with grids imposed over the front. They're very strange-looking images.
I see now, though, that Harry, that they're planning to go back to the moon. It's taken a while,
and this is a very good question and a good thing that they're doing. They're going back there. Actually, was not stopped, but it was just delayed.
What do they hope to do going back this time?
Well, I think we have to step back one and talk a little bit about why they went there in the first place. And they went there in the first place because it was the Cold War, and that was fueled by the battle between the USSR and the USA at the time.
Right.
And it was President Johnson who actually initiated the space race. And it was also President Johnson who stopped the space race. Mm. When he initiated it, he was actually a counselor for President Kennedy. And he was the genius who actually realized that if they go to the moon and they take as many photographs as they can, then they can possibly beat the Russians. And there is a really famous cut from a newspaper where he said this in the public. He says, "I wish I didn't have to say this, but when we realized that the Russians didn't have as many weapons of mass destruction as they said they did, and this is that they gathered with the help of satellites." And
right.
Satellites had cameras on board. And
sure.
What were the satellites for, first and foremost? To photograph parts of the USSR. Then they realized that they didn't have to worry about this race to the moon because the Russians would not have gone. They didn't have enough power to get there. So they stopped the space race. So that's when kind of like the military space race ended. And then one of the questions that I've had the chance to deal with was, why is it that we're still going to space? Why do we have space? And it's about the institutionalization of civilian space research. When this whole space race stopped, the Americans kind of like didn't really stop it, but they just put it on hold. And so the United States led this, went to the United Nations and militated for having a space treaty. So in the meantime, while they were doing whatever they were doing, nobody else would go to claim or put a flag on the moon. So that's how the space treaty was signed, with all these countries that they kind of like got together and they said, let's sign the space treaty, let's say that space is the province of mankind. But what happened then, and this is like an unexpected outcome, all these countries, they were forced to institutionalize space in some sort of form, right? And so they had space agencies, space people who were dealing with space things, signing treaties. Who do you assign to sign a treaty from a government, right? So all of a sudden, because of the space treaty, humankind started dealing with space. So that was one reason. And the other reason was, we still kept things to go to space. So the International Space Station, I never consider it like a space, proper space station, but more like a laboratory where we test science. Every technology that is being found out there, we use back on Earth for life-saving devices, for heart, for hearing, for, medical things, filter. So these are called space spin-offs. So space spin-offs were very profitable because they were better and faster and more efficient than other things that were doing the same thing, but were developed with technology that was just from Earth. So space spin-offs and the fact that countries around the world institutionalized space by making organizations, and then pictures, because I think pictures are the most extraordinary things that inspire humankind. People saw Earth for the first time from outside Earth. And that completely changed, from a mass media point of view, the way we perceive ourselves in the universe. We don't know if there is alien life. I mean, we always say, yeah, surely there must be alien life. Surely there are aliens out there. I mean, it would be silly not to think that wouldn't be. But we don't have any proof. So then seeing ourselves, seeing the fragile layer of atmosphere, seeing those beautiful, amazing pictures from the moon, Carl Sagan with the pale blue dot, all that went into the media stream and completely changed the heart of the people around the world. So these three things actually are the reason why now we have civilian space research, when people really go, scientists really go and say, I really want to know how the universe works. The moon is, as I was saying, one of the best places, very close to us, that will allow us to photograph the universe. And why is this important? It is important because we learn about how things function, how physics are working. Also, the moon is going to be a very important base in space exploration. There are a few people that say we should go to Mars first, but now the majority of the countries have signed treaties, and the general opinion is that, yes, we should go to the moon first, make a base there. It's really close to home. you can bring astronauts back, build something in the cislunar space, which is the space between the moon and the Earth, and let's do first steps, small first steps.
Baby steps.
Baby steps.
Another interesting thing about the exhibition is that it actually tells two stories about the advent of digital photography, the first in the 1960s to aid the space race. But the reason why this exhibition is possible now is that newspapers around the world are selling off their analog archives because they use nothing now but digital imaging. And so they're being privatized and sold on eBay, which is where I bought all of these photographs, and therefore that archive is being fragmented and dispersed into private hands. So this exhibition is about the advent of digital imaging at two levels, including at the moment the disintegration of historical archives of analog photographs. I bought most of these from a dealer in Iceland via eBay, for the Daily Telegraph, which sold all of its archive. The Sydney Morning Herald recently sold all of its analog archive, and that whole history is now being dispersed around the world. This exhibition is a very small, piece of it.